Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, for coming to Bard's Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation. Thank you for coming tonight. If you've come from my friend Charlotte Dively's show, Prophetic Art Class, thank you very much. And if you have not, but you are interested in Christian art, you can find her show on Facebook app called Newt Now. It's real easy to find. You just go to the search engine and type in as one word, Newt Now, and you could just click on there and they'll bring it to a page that has multiple shows on there, including this one. And you also find Samuel Sanford's on there, and you will find Also, Mark Prasik's show, and you'll see another one of Charlotte's show, which is called Pray USA. So tonight, as we do on Wednesday nights, we kind of move away from the politics for a little bit for one evening, and we like to have, you know, authors come on and, you know, talk about their books, or people who have businesses or their own shows, or playwrights, or, you know, things of that nature come on so we can, you know, promote the shows. And one thing I do is, and one thing I like about Blog Talk Radio is that it archives the show. So if people did not have an opportunity to come in and listen to the show live tonight, to hear about our authors, among others, wares, then they can also listen to it on the archives, you know, at their convenience. And also what I do normally is the weekend after the show is I do a rebroadcast of this episode. So that gives multiple opportunities for people to come and listen to the show if they cannot make it in, to listen to it live tonight. Now, tonight I have two authors, I have two guests. The first one is Sean Henneman, and he, as I have described here, is he's an author, speaker, he's an ordained minister, mentor, and a radio personality for the Doctor of Love show. He is a certified marriage coach and part of the Marriage Works series from the American Association of Christian Counselors. Now, tonight he will be here to talk about his book, Wisdom, Preventing Problems Before They Happen. And we also have another author on tonight. His name is Ted Krim, and he will tell us of his book series called The World of Shandahar. And he has co-authored three novels and short stories and two anthologies. And currently he is working on a role-playing game based on those novels. And The World of Shandahar is an epic fantasy adventure series filled with battles, romance, and intrigue. But first, as I said, we have Sean Henneman up speaking of his talking about his book, Wisdom. And without further ado, I would like to bring him in. Hello, Sean. How are you doing?
How you doing, Robert?
Good, good. Good. So you want to start off? Go ahead and you know, give us a little synopsis of your book, whatever you'd like to say about it. Go ahead.
Yes. First of all, I just want to say thank you for having me on your show. Definitely appreciate the opportunity to come on your show. Thanks once again.
You're welcome.
The book Wisdom, Preventing Problems Before They Happen came by my wife and I doing counsel numerous couples, and we kind of just thought, wow, what if people played out scenarios in their head about something that could possibly happen ahead of time before they actually happen? Sometimes I like to think that we kind of live in a mindless society where we just kind of do everything mindlessly. And we talked about this. I talked about this before. Something simple I used in a book as far as even just taking out the trash. If you know that when your wife come home, she likes you to take the trash out and there's no flies and anything of that nature around the garbage because there's this stuff sitting in the garbage can. If you know that she causes havoc, you know, this is a situation you always get into because you haven't taken out the trash and you know she's going to be highly frustrated, why not just take out the garbage before she gets home? And it sounds simple, but a lot of times we kind of feel like we don't want to be controlled because we can play this scenario out and say, oh, well, I'm not going to let her control me, or vice versa, even for wives. If there's some things that you know your husband isn't too fond about for whatever it is, he might, you know, want the house clean before you come home, just do those small things. That's going to definitely help out around the house. It's going to eliminate so many problems. Now, I know a lot of times problems happen. They're unavoidable. But at the same time, we can eliminate so many of them. I know my wife likes the back of my hand, or at least I think I like to know her by the back, like,
right,
know, back of my hand. But I know what frustrates her. I know what gets on her nerves. I know certain things that come along that she might get frustrated about. So I just go ahead and do those things ahead of time to avoid the conversation that we might have. We might get frustrated, and sometimes you even get to the point where you're not even talking because of a situation that you knew that was going to bother your spouse, and you chose not to do it. But that's just something simple that I cover in the book. There's plenty of other things that I discuss in the book, too. Don't want to give it all away, but that was just something simple. And as you can see on the cover, there's like a banana right there on the cover. You know, just making sure that you don't slip into these same mistakes, because we can talk about the same things over and over again and not resolve anything. We can have the same problems and not resolve them. So why not go ahead and resolve them ahead of time before you get into this conversation? So that's basically what the book is all about.
And what kind of format do you have the book? How are the chapters set up?
The chapters are set up. I have different I'll give you just a quick sample of the chapters that I have. The chapters in the book, they read as wisdom in relationships, wisdom in marriage, wisdom in your finances. We kind of know our spouse's spending habits and the way we should come together before we get to spending money, because that's a big problem in marriages and not discussing finances. We have chapters in the book such as wisdom in wisdom in business. If you're a business owner, certain things that you should walk in integrity, carry yourself with integrity. That's huge. And then wisdom in communication. So we have different wisdom nuggets that applies for any person who picks up this book.
And do you have I haven't had the opportunity to read it. So do you have any, examples inside the book, to illustrate the points that you're trying to make?
Yes.
Like people, like any kind of, life experiences.
Well, even, I know for me, I use a lot of things that I've been through in my personal life. There's situations that I used where even as growing up as a kid, I grew up in a very structured home. So I knew the tendencies. I grew up in a single-parent home, but I knew the tendencies of my mom. There were simple things that just needed to be done, or there were consequences. I gave a scenario about how when I was younger, my mom always told us before she got home, the house needs to be clean before you go outside. And we always knew that needed to be done first, because she would get home later, at a later time. And one day, I just decided to challenge her authority, and I decided to go outside and play football with my friends before I ended up cleaning up the house. So long story short, I ended up getting in trouble because I didn't obey the law of the land. And I thought to myself, I knew the consequences, but why didn't I follow through? And a lot of times I talk about things such as rebellion, things of that nature.
Okay, we've got a person in the chat here, Sean. So if you bear with me, I'm going to. I'd like to. This is an interactive forum, Blog Talk Radio, which I believe you're at least somewhat familiar with. So, and we could talk that later, because through my understanding, are you starting on a show yourself, or?
Yes. Also, I have the Dr. Love Show, which comes on. We came on originally on AM stations, at least three different AM stations, one in Tennessee, one here in Arizona, and then one in Atlanta. But we still do the one in Atlanta. But then we also do the show that's streaming live on Facebook.
That's the newer one, is it not, to my understanding?
Yes. Yes, that's the one that we're currently doing now. We just kicked the show off this past Tuesday, and we come on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. That'll be 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it's very interactive. I love it to be able to talk to different people around the country about topics on marriage, topics on singleness, finances, anything that has to do with helping you become a better person.
Now, I'd like to go over your different shows in a few moments, in some moments, because, you know, just, you know, we're here to talk about the book, but then if we can also, you know, I think it can also segue into your shows, because I'm really interested in hearing more about, you know, the love show. And definitely. But about your book, what was the motivation behind writing the book? I mean, care to tell us what motivated you to write the book?
Mm-hmm. What motivated me was, well, first of all, I like to talk. I really, really like to talk. I love people. So my wife and I, we always have these stimulating conversations. We talk about a lot of different things, And she would always tell me, why don't you write these things down? I think you should write them down. And over time, that's what I would do. I would write down stuff that we talked about, and there would be conversations that we had. And I would just, next thing you know, I had a notebook full of things we talked about, whether they were personal, because even in my books, I like to be transparent in my personal life about even some of my failures, things that I've been through, to let people know that I'm not any kind of superhero and all this other stuff. I'm human just like everybody else, and let people see the transparency in my life. So that's how writing the book came about, and it actually became something that I really, really enjoyed. So that's how I came about being an author, just from writing conversations that my wife and I had.
Okay, and I've seen your web, and I've had a chance to look a little bit at your website, and at this time, and I'll do this a couple times in the conversation, is what I'll do is I'm going to, of course, with your permission, put the link to your website here in the chat.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So we have the guest in there. We'll, you can go there and check it out if they'd like. There we go. And then as more people chime in and come in, then we'll put that in there some more. So tell me, since I've got the link there, and I have it up, if you want to talk some more about your website, of course, you're welcome to do that as well.
Yes. The website, Never Again Ministries, that's the name of my wife and I ministry. We started it in 2008. It was birthed through my wife and our passion for marriages and relationships, and seeing how we love to see the growth of people. We love to see how people overcome different personal issues in their lives. It's an awesome feeling to know that you were used to be able to help someone else out in their own lives, to help them grow and mature as people. So that's how Never Again Ministries came about. We served at our church in the marriage ministry for years. So we had the experience and then taking the courses and the classes and the marriage coaching and things like that. My wife has her bachelor's degree in social work. So we usually deal with a lot of people and personal issues. So that's how the ministry came about. We knew that this was something we were called to do, and we started it in 2008, and we never looked back.
2008, okay, so it's been about 4 years. How long did it take you to develop the book? How long was the process of? No, I know you said you took a lot of notes over time, and then it coalesced into that, and then you brought it into a book. How long did it take you the actually process of taking the notes and put them in the book format?
It took about, well, my first book, of course, my first book took the longest. I have four, this is my fourth book. This book literally took me about 90 days.
Wow.
Yeah, this book, and it's about 126 pages, so it's not like, a big read. I mean, 126 pages, you can get through that in a couple of days. So it took me about 90 days, but it's more of the marketing and the printing process that takes longer than the actual book itself.
Well, I can imagine. And through what I've seen, I guess the you know, the book, and this one included, has a religious aspect to it?
Yes, I use biblical scripture to back up the things that I talk about. And we just use, and in my books, we use very practical, we try not to get deep. We try to meet everybody where they're at. So we always use scripture to back up what we talk about. But at the same time, we make it friendly for everybody. It's not a theological dissertation or anything of that nature. It's just where we like to meet everybody where they're at. Because if we can be all things to all people, it helps others.
Right, and are there any particular scriptures that you like to use, you know, that you find, you know, that you use more often than others in some of these, or is there certain books? You know, I'm somewhat familiar with the Bible, so, and I'm presuming that's what you're getting the scriptures from to do. Mm-hmm. Are there any particular ones that you see applying a lot to what you are writing about?
Yes, I always use a common scripture that I use is Romans 8:28, and all things work together for the good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. Familiar piece of scripture, but I use that a lot to let people know that there is hope. And then for this book in particular, for wisdom, the book is Proverbs. What is it? It's Proverbs 27 and 14, I believe, where he talks about it. No, I'm sorry, Proverbs 27, 12, where it says, a prudent person foresees danger and takes precautions. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. That's the scripture that I use mostly for the latest book.
Okay, because with the theme, you know, of what the book is. Now you've written other books. What are the names of the other books that you've written? You said you've written four.
Yes, the first book is entitled "If You Apply These Principles," and then the subtitle is "God Is More Practical Than We Think." That came out in 2008. Then in 2009, I published my second book, which is entitled "It's the Woman You Gave Me." And that book is how we get past the blame game in our marriages and relationships, because it seems like we like to blame other people for a lot of our personal setbacks. That came out in 2009. And then in 2010, I wrote a workbook entitled Three Are Even Better. And it was a workbook for married couples to let people know when God is in the middle of your marriage, you know, how he can enhance your marriage and help your marriage grow. So that came out in 2010, and then, of course, my latest book is out now.
And it's been, I haven't had much of an opportunity to read any of your works, but does any of them cover, you know, children and the bearing of children, and how that ties to society?
Yes, the Three Are Even Better book, we discuss different topics. We talk about blended families. And we talk about, you know, we have a chapter in there for children, too. So we talk about children in that workbook and how working together as, because blended families are big in today's society. And we talk about how you can work together as a team.
Divorce rate, correct?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then we talk about that in the Three Are Even Better books. We have a chapter dedicated to that, but then also, for It's the Woman You Gave Me, I talk about children, too, and how me growing up in a single parent home, how that affected my personal life with my father being in and out of my life and the advantages of having intact family in the home.
Well, one of the things that we like to touch here and talk about on Bard's Logic Political Talk, and this isn't, I'm not going to bring this up political per se, because, you know, Wednesday nights is, you know, kind of give people a little break from the politics and, you know, you want to touch on other issues. This next question doesn't stem as much from politics as it does from the culture. And in the way, in some way, you know, the culture in America is changing. And in, you know, some of our beliefs of the conservative conversation is that one of the things that's changing in the culture of the, in the United States, getting back to childbearing, is that you're noticing more and more people are having less and less children. And I think the country's suffering for that. I mean, back in the, when I was growing up, I mean, my dad came from 18 children, and my mom came from 10, and I came from 7. But it seems like now, I mean, if you have more than 3 kids, you know, something's wrong. You know what I mean? People think, whoa, you know, what kind of people are you guys to have so many children? So do you cover any of that in the book? Or if not, if you don't mind me asking, what are your thoughts on the amount of or the level of children having and how that's affecting, at least in my opinion, the culture of this nation?
Yes. It's a very interesting topic when you talk about it. I mean, because I have 2 children and I'm finished. I'm not having any more children. You know, so
I understand it's more expensive today as it was mm-hmm. back then, and a lot, at least in my dad's case, they lived on a farm, so of course the more hands to, you know, the better, and I understand how that that stands true in a lot of your you know, lower income nations as well, so that's one of the motivations behind having, you know, a large family, is because economic needs, and actually it works backwards. Even though you would think the more people made, the more children they have, but actually it looks like it's been in the reverse, as the less people make, the more children they have, because in some instances, and I'm not saying this is true in the United States, but it's an economic thing where the children can actually help out with the income of the family.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so you do have some people who their children are of age, they're 16 and they're able to work.
Oh, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
That plays a big part. Sometimes your parents say, hey, you're 16 now, you can go work part-time and go to school, and it helps you be responsible and growing up and holding a job and things of that nature. But for me, I feel the bigger family, and like you were saying, the bigger family is kind of a thing of the past, you know. And I think a lot of it has to do with economics. I really believe it does. Just like you were saying earlier, the cost of living is so expensive. I mean, we went to the movies the other day, took my daughter to the movies, and I paid a lot of money, you know, but who wouldn't want to do anything for their child? But it just becomes so expensive with the internet today. We have internet access, and then even something that I was planning on writing a book about is kids, and do they play anymore? Are they able to go and play with other kids next door? And because of the technology, we have so many kids that just like to kind of sit around and they want to be on their phones. You know, kids have cell phones now. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we never had cell phones growing up. I mean, if you've seen a cell phone, we thought people had money.
Right. And now it's commonplace. And I think that's a good segue into the next question. Is, you know, what are the projects that, you know, you're looking at working on in the future?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm working on book number 5. I have some of book number 5, which is entitled Catching Hell But Still Producing, What Will You Do in the Midst of the Storm? And that's more of what do you do when trials and tribulations break out in your life and you still have to go work a job, you still have different things to do that's pulling on your life. You know, what do you do when you lose a parent or a spouse and there's so many demands on your life? So that'll be out next summer. And my wife and I will also have a marriage retreat we're doing for my workbook, The 3 Are Even Better, which we're hosting here in Payson, Arizona, October 25th through the 27th. So we're going to have our first marriage retreat on 5 acres of land, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, great. Now, is there any other place that you sell your books besides your website, or you sell them strictly through the website?
Yes, predominantly they go through the website, because a lot of times when people buy from the website, we give them a whole bunch of goodies. We give them wristbands and magnets for the refrigerator, things like that. But we'll also have our books on Amazon.com also.
Okay. Okay, if you have any kind of links that you'd like to put in the chat as well, you know, you're welcome to it. Well, and you mentioned earlier that you have a show that you're going to be, that you just started, was that last night?
Yes, we started it yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, if you want to speak more on that, that's fine. Once again, tell the audience what time it is, where they can find the show, you know, things of that nature.
Yes, it's the Dr. Love Show. It comes on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it's live via Facebook. So,
how does that work? How do they listen to it live via Facebook? To the people in the audience and who are going to listen later on the archive.
Mm-hmm. If you're already on Facebook, if you have a Facebook account, on my page, there's a link that says Dr. Love Show. And even when we're in the queue, actually, I will send out links that let people know, hey, we are live in the queue right now, so you can actually opt in through Facebook, and we'll be streaming live. So you can see people, you can hear people. It's very interactive. We can hold up to about 35 people. So that's how it works. It's something new. It's new. I don't know too many other people that's doing it. I connected with Mark Prasic.
Okay.
Really, really good guy. Helped me out a lot with doing this show.
I'm actually good friends with Mark Prasic.
He introduced me to you.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and since we brought him up, I'd like to go ahead and give a plug into his show, which is also you can find on Facebook. Just go into the search engine and type in as one word, Newt Now, NEWTNOW, and then that will take you to a page, and then getting to you just click on where you see his link, and then you're just a few clicks away to getting on the show, and it also is it's a video chat. Is your a video chat as well?
Yes.
Okay, great. But the good thing about it is it's not only a video chat. You also do not necessarily have to have a webcam. Cause I know some people are uncomfortable with that, including myself. I've gone on to Mark's show for quite some time now, and I've never put a webcam on just because. I just don't like being on camera, I guess. I don't know. My daughter loves to be, but she doesn't get that from me. So, yeah, I hate getting my picture taken, too. I even told my wife, a little very short story here, is, you know, we got married in November, and I said, you know, I know it's traditional, but do we really have to do the wedding album? And if we do have to, do I have to be in it? And she said, well, you know, I said, you could just do your family and, you know, and stuff like that, and maybe some people in my family, but do I really have to be in it? And she's like, yes. So I'm like, all right, fine. Yeah. I thought I'd at least give it a try. But, you know, but back to one point is that, you know, you can also, if you just would like to just have audio, you can just have a set of headphones and, you know, with a mic and, you know, talk that way. But not even, you're not even limited in that manner to, you know, as well, because you can also just come into the show and just chat. There's also a chat aspect like there is on Blog Talk Radio. But one thing I know different is I'm in experimental stage too, and, you know, I've been doing the show for, you know, a little bit. And, you know, tonight I have this plugged into Political Conservative because, you know, that's the meat and potatoes of my show. But I'm also going to, looks like I'm going to be moving over to maybe, you know, book categories. And, you know, when I do promotions, I'll probably do that as well, you know, and see what successes I can get out, you know, from that. Because one of the things on Wednesday nights we do is, as we're doing here, is promoting people's, you know, books and shows. So that being said, I'm going to bring the floor back to you, Sean. And if anything else you want to bring up about your the show, your Dr. Love Show, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and also for the show, and I'm glad that you also brought up about not having to have the webcam on. You know, it's totally optional because, like you say, some people can. They just don't want to be on there, so it can kind of scare people sometimes. But it's totally optional. But the show, we discussed, actually, the name came about through when we were hosting our radio show locally here in Arizona. The owner, he read one of my books, and then that's how the name came about. And he said, all right, Sean, he said, I read your book. He said, you're the doctor of love. And I said, okay. He said, after I read the book, you know, I liked it. And he said, And it just stuck. So everybody in the studio started calling me that. And he said, why don't you just have a Dr. Love show? I said, well, okay. And it stuck from there. And people at church started calling me that. And I just said, okay. and the show.
If it sticks and it could be a good marketing point, you know, do it.
Yeah, exactly. Because my name and my wife's name is kind of hard to pronounce. So it's easier for people to just say Dr. Love, and it just kind of comes off a little more clear instead of people saying my actual name.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I don't even know. Did I pronounce it right in the introduction? Or if
yes,
not,
you
correct
did.
Me. Good, okay.
Yes, you did. So that definitely helps, because a lot of people say, okay, let me try to figure out your name. <You know? laughs> So thanks. But the show, we address real topics. I mean, we address there's nothing that's too honest. I mean, we try to talk to everybody about from premarital sex to you know, just everything. You know, growing up in a single parent home, we talk about overcoming rejection. You know, some people struggle in that area with being rejected as a child or growing up in a single parent home. We talk about soul ties. We talk about, you know, just different people, you know, having premarital sex, and we talk about finances. We talk about getting out of debt. We talk about saving money, you know, save a tenth, you know, save a tenth, give a tenth, and live off of 80%. We talk about so many different things. We try to meet everybody where they are. And a lot of times we get a lot of questions. I get a lot of questions on Facebook and then Twitter, and a lot of times that's how the shows are formulated, because a lot of people have questions. We talk about divorce. I mean, just everything.
When you talk about give a tenth, are you talking about tithing?
Yes. Yes, we talk about tithing.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we cover everything, but at the end of the day, we discuss everything from a biblical perspective, but again, we talk to people and we meet people where they're at, and I believe that's why, one of the reasons why the show is very popular. We've had over 10,000 downloads of the show, so I'm excited
about
that.
Wow. Well, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so what are the things, you mentioned, you know, the website. What are the things can someone who goes to your website, what else can they see, and what does it link them to?
Well, if they go to the website, we let people know also about our marriage retreat that's coming up. But then we also have blogs. My wife and I, we blog on different topics. Sometimes it can be something from the show that we kind of got later after. We said, well, we should have talked about that, and we'll blog about it. And then we have the link for the streaming Facebook for the show. We have pictures up there of my family and I, some places where we speak at and different events. And then we have our products there, but people can purchase the books, and if people want to book us for speaking engagements. And we have some YouTube videos, just real interactive stuff to let people know that we're here for them, try to give as many resources as possible.
And how much is the book? How much is Wisdom? How much are you selling this for?
Wisdom is
$9.99. Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And one of your other books, you said you've got your other ones, such as the one you mentioned, This Is Who You Gave Me, or I know, mm-hmm. I didn't get all that name right, but.
Yeah, no problem. It's The Woman You Gave Me is it's $8.99.
And how many pages is that one?
That is about 109 pages.
Okay.
And then the Three Are Even Better book is $9.99. So they're very reasonable prices. We just want to get good product into people's hands, and just to help people grow from our personal experiences.
Well, that sounds great. I think it would be very relevant for a lot of the things we see today. And I think it really, it sounds like they really address some of the the cultural difficulties, at least in my opinion, you know, that we're having, and I think those would address those. Because I reiterate, one of the things we'd like to, you know, do as part of the conservative conversation is, you know, bring back some of the values that, you know, that this country has seemed to lost, you know, have to have lost. And, you know, we think that because of that loss, it definitely has caused a detriment to, you know, to the nation. And one of those, one I'm a big, you know, big advocate for is personal responsibility. I think people, you know, especially, and I hate to say it, you know, you hear about, you know, you used to hear about deadbeat dads all the time. But now you're also starting to hear more about, you know, deadbeat moms as well, you know, and that's part of personal responsibility. And, you know, which, you know, as I said, you know, that's a big topic for me. And it sounds like that, you know, these books would address, you know, something like that.
Yes, yes, definitely. Because, you know, even though I'm Christian, I tell people there's a part you have to play too. Be responsible. And, you know, a lot of these things I discuss on Facebook and Twitter, I'm a big accountability guy. I'm big on personal responsibility. You know, I tell guys, hey, take care of your children. If it didn't work out between you and the mom, you know, hey, move on, but you still take care of your child. You still have a responsibility to your child. You know, work. You know, provide for your family. I mean, like you say, some of the simple things seem like we kind of got away from them. And I'm a big person on personal responsibility, so I totally understand what you're saying.
Right, and I think we need to, you know, we need to bring the culture back. And I think, you know, as I said, you know, people getting these books and reading them, you know, I think it can do something for, you know, the culture if you get enough people, you know, to write them, to, you know,
yeah,
to read them and actually live by, you know, live by the points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because at the end of the day, my wife and I, there's no better feeling than being able to know that we were able to help someone. To see, I mean, we had a marriage class we taught earlier this year. And to see how people transform, to see the change and growth in people from the first week where people had their arms folded and they didn't want to be there, things like that, to going through the 5-6 week classes and then seeing people grow and seeing them have more questions and want to continue to talk with my wife and I and to dig into deeper issues, those things give us joy to see people be free from a past that they might not want to discuss with people.
Mm-hmm.
Those things give us personal joy, because at the end of the day, we all have things that we need to address, big or small. And transparency is key. So I believe with my wife and I, we try to be as transparent as possible. Even after 10 years of marriage for us, you know, we have trials and tribulations. We go through different things, but we're still together.
Right, because, well, and part of, you know, just, you know, my opinion, you know, you know, is that, you know, part of marriage is actually building, you know, and working a life together, you know, and when you work and you build, sometimes, you know, it doesn't always, you know, come out the way you'd like, and sometimes, you know, things crumble and you have to rebuild, you know, but, you know, that's part of that life that you work on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, most definitely. Yeah, and at the end of the day, I'm able to get proper rest at night because I felt like I was being used by God to be able to help people. So at the end of the day, that's what gives us joy, like I was saying earlier. And writing books is also a great joy for me, to see somebody that was helped during this process and say, hey, somebody leave me a message on Facebook, or they send a, you know, they leave comments on a comment page and say, hey, that really helped me, or they responded to a YouTube video. So the whole social media it could be a double-edged sword, because some people don't like the internet, some people love it, and I tell people I use it for its good.
It's a tool, right?
Exactly,
it's a tool.
Exactly.
But you brought up YouTube. Do you have hold on a second. I'm sorry about that. I have another phone going off here, and I should never have a phone in my office when I'm on this show. sometimes that happens. I apologize, folks, for that. Thank you for your understanding. Go ahead, John. I apologize. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No problem. On our YouTube video, of course, there's a lot of them with my wife and I, and we talk about some things from that stem from the show.
Now on the YouTube videos, I'm not as versed on YouTube videos as I would like to be. Isn't there like a person has their own page or channel? Oh, is it called a channel? Do you have your own channel?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, what's the name of the channel? Do you want to put the channel in the chat and for people to go to look at your videos?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I can do that right now.
Great, and then for the audience who are not in the chat or who will be listening to the show on the archives at a later time or during the rebroadcast this weekend, if you could just tell us what the channel is for people can search for it that way also.
Yes, and actually, you know, I can put that in the queue, and then that way they can have the link because my website, I mean our YouTube page is One Heinemann, which is my last name, forward slash YouTube, and I'll make sure I put that in the queue.
Yeah, and after you put that in, I'll spell that out because, as you said, sometimes your name's difficult to pronounce, and thus, you know, people are going to want to get a spelling of it. And what I'll do is after you put it in there, I'll spell it out for the audience, you know, who's not on chat, who's listening, or who's going to be in the archives. Great. Okay. Well, it's http://www.youtube.com. /user/1 HYNEMAN, and that will get you to the videos. Now, how many videos do you have on there? And then we'll have to wrap this up soon because I've got another person calling in at 9 p.m. So another offer coming in at 9 p.m. So, but how many videos do you have on there? If you can recall,
I have 28 or 29 videos on there.
Wow, that's great. That's great.
Yeah. If people like to see, I think people like to see the visual aspect of me. They kind of like to see, because a lot of times I'm behind a microphone, so people, they like the YouTube videos, so they like to see my wife and I interacting.
Sure. Yeah, you like to have that video. That's the one, you know, thing that on your show that you're going to have, that you'll have a benefit over, you know, there's pros and cons with each venue, you know what I mean, with each, you know, forum or mode of communication. And one of the, you know, one of the benefits of the show that you're going to be conducting is going to be, you know, the video aspect where people can show, you know, little video clips like yours and, you know, to illustrate a point or to tell a story.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've learned over time to not be too shy in front of the camera. It was a process, but I'm pretty comfortable with it now. It's been a couple of years now, so it's kind of second nature to me now.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm a firm believer of people adapting to almost any situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just takes time to adapt, but I think people can adapt to almost anything.
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, I've got a couple minutes here for you, so if there's anything you would like to say to wrap things up, first, before you do that, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on. I definitely would like to have you come on some more, and then some other time we could talk in depth about your other books or about your shows, and, you know, keep in touch, see what's happening, and it's good to, you know, maybe have you part of our conservative conversation and you know, changing the culture. In which, you know, bringing America back, and that's one of our goals, or the goal. So go ahead.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Thanks again for giving me the opportunity to come on your show and speak about my books. Thanks for the connection, and I'll definitely be staying in touch with you via
Great.
Facebook. And anytime you want me to come on, even if maybe my wife and I, you can have both of us. A lot of times people,
oh, my gosh,
like,
that'd be phenomenal, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of times people like to see us together. So we can maybe plan something around that, and we would love to come back on your show.
Oh, that'd be great. Okay, well, if there's any other points, go ahead real quick, and then we'll have to, you know, part ways for a little bit, but we definitely will keep in touch. And you
yeah,
want to just give the link again one more time to your website, and then we'll have to go.
Yes, the website is www.neveragainministries.com. It's all one word, neveragainministries.com. We got a lot of freebies on there we like to give to you too, so check out the website.
All right, well, thank you very much, Sean. I really appreciate you coming in, and we were talking about his book, Wisdom, among others, and also his show, The Dr. Love Show, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Okay, thank you so much, Robert. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Okay, folks, I hope you enjoyed that interview. I know I did, and I'm definitely looking forward to having him come back. Let's see, we've got another gentleman coming in. He's going to be coming in about 9 minutes. Might be able to get him in a little bit earlier. And that gentleman is Ted Krim. And what he's going to come in to talk about is his book series called The World of Shandahar, and his book series. And as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, he has co-authored 3 novels and some short stories and 2 anthologies. Currently is working on a role-playing game based on the novels. And what The World of Shandahar is, they are epic fantasy adventure books filled with this description here is the series filled with battles, romance, and intrigue. And I've had the opportunity, actually, to read the books because I'm a real big fan of the genre. I really like fantasy fiction books myself, and there definitely is, you know, things, you know, stuff in there, both for girls and, or men and women, girls and boys, not girls and boys, because, you know, it's for a more, you know, adult audience or mature audience, you know, just because of the violence and whatnot in there, because it is, you know, sword fights and battles and, you know, romance, so I'm sure you got an illustration, you know, of the content of the book. But definitely, I mean, I know plenty of women who's read the book, and, you know, most people think, oh, fantasy fiction, you know, maybe that's just a guy thing, but it's actually not. And I know Ted Krim has gone through some of the Renaissance Festival circuits around the country. He's also been some of your, like, Gen Cons and conventions, science fiction and fantasy fiction conventions, things of that nature. And so I'll be bringing him in about 5 minutes. So to give a little clue about tomorrow night's show is tomorrow night I'm going to have a gentleman from Gulag Bound, which is a blog, and that will be Arlen Williams, and he's going to come in to talk about Agenda 21. And what we're going to do is we're going to take the topics from Agenda 21, and we are going to put them in with green conservatism, and then to give people just an idea of what green conservatism is. I said this is a setup for tomorrow's show, tomorrow night. Enjoy this little clip. It's 4 minutes, and then after that is done, it'll be the time to bring in Ted Krim.
From the shores of Maine to the beaches of Hawaii, America is defined by its natural beauty. Most Americans have a healthy respect for our environment. They want government to ensure that we have clean air and water, and they want to preserve America's parks and wildlife for future generations. Many Americans also believe that new science and technology are key to solving our environmental challenges, not government regulation and litigation. Despite the broad agreement among Americans, the political debate in Washington has become even more divided. Liberals accuse conservatives of not caring about the environment, and conservatives accuse liberals of sacrificing a healthy economy and individual freedom for the environment. As a result, issues like climate change and energy development have become lightning rods for controversy, and progress has been blocked by politics.
I think somehow in the 1980s, the environment became seen as liberal versus conservative, but it shouldn't be.
In his book, A Contract with the Earth, Newt argues that conservatives need to develop a green conservatism.
Green conservatism is the recognition that the basic principles of conservatism, market orientation, incentives, the work ethic, focus on science and technology and engineering, practical realism, all of these can be brought to bear to actually create better solutions faster than bureaucracy, litigation, big government, regulation.
Newt emphasizes the need for more energy from clean coal, nuclear, solar, wind, biofuel, oil, and natural gas. In 2008, Newt and I hosted a documentary about America's vast energy potential. Our movie, We Have the Power, argues that America can have a clean, abundant, and affordable energy supply. But what about climate change, an issue that has become contentious in recent elections? Conservatives and liberals disagree over the cause, much less how to solve it. Again, Newt stresses the importance of conservatives offering better solutions.
I don't think that the catastrophist left has enough evidence to say for sure that we're going to have global warming and it'll be a disaster. And I don't think that the anti-global warming right has enough evidence to say for sure that there won't be global warming. And so the question for me becomes, if the word conservatism implies conserving things, and if it implies caution, then what's the right cautionary strategy?
So what is the future for green conservatism? With the White House and Congress controlled by Democrats, is there really a market for conservative solutions on the environment?
I think it's going to be a very clear choice, and as this economy gets worse, people are going to want a sound economy and a good environment. They're not going to want to destroy the economy in the name of the environment. Hi, I'm Newt Gingrich.
And I'm Calista Gingrich. We believe that a healthy environment must be designed to coexist with a growing economy.
Today, new science and technology can create better solutions than government regulation and litigation.
Market incentives such as tax credits and prizes will encourage scientific and technological breakthroughs.
On the other hand, tax increases will kill jobs, reduce the amount of available energy, and weaken the economy.
To learn more about America's potential to develop affordable, abundant, and clean energy, Newt and I encourage you to check out our movie, We Have the Power.
And to learn more about green conservatism, Terry Maple and I encourage you to take a look at our book, A Contract with the Earth.
America is blessed with natural resources and innovative opportunity.
With your help, we can make America the global leader in conservation for future generations.
Okay, folks, and yes, that is green conservatism, one of the topics that we will be talking tomorrow night, Thursday show, Green Thursdays, which is for green conservatism. And once again, we will have Arlen Williams from Gulag Bond come in, and we also might have another guest with him, which is Mark Musser, who's also part of the groups that Arlen is in, the Sovereignty Group. And so without further ado, what I'd like to do at this time is bring in Ted Krim to talk about his book series, The World of Shandahar. Let me bring him in here. Hello, Ted. This is Ted Krim.
Hello,
yes.
Mr. Jenner. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for coming to the show.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Well,
if you'd like to give a description, a synopsis of your book or your series, go right to it.
Sure. Thank you. First of all, I'd like to say Shadow Over Shandahar, a world, fantasy adventure world that my partner Tracy and I created, it seems like eons ago. But we got ideas from a lot of different types of fantasy adventure, Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, the list goes on. And we took a lot of those elements and we put them together, put our little black-hearted desires into it and everything, and came up with a world that really doesn't really sound like anything else. And everybody who is listening, you can read the first chapter of all of my books on my website. So let me go ahead and establish my website right now. It's www. www.worldofshandahar, and Shandahar is spelled Shandahar, and that's .com, worldofshandahar.com. You can read the first chapter of all of my books on my website. You can also order from there via a PayPal account. In creating the world, we had to make it a little different than anything else out there. And one of those things we did was we took the main characters as a focus of this of our first series, Shadow Over Shandahar, which is the name of our first ongoing series. We made them believable. We put human-like qualities in all of them. You know, our characters get tired of seeing each other. They argue and bicker. You know, hey, we're going to camp out right here. There's a lake nearby. You smell. You need to go jump in and take a bath. Tongue-in-cheek humor we put to everything. But, you know, it gives our characters that believability that a lot of other fantasy genres don't have. Our characters change their clothes. Throughout this adventure, you're not going to read. They're going to be in the same green tunic and trousers throughout the whole book. One of the many elements that makes us different. And of the four or five major plot lines we have going on in our first series, the one that I enjoy the most, the one topic of our plot that really stands out to me that I really enjoy is we cursed our world to repeat itself. And when I say repeat itself, you know, when history reaches a certain point, everything goes back to the very beginning and starts all over again. And, you know, it's take the Etch-a-Sketch effect. If you make a mistake on the Etch-a-Sketch and you can't really correct it and it's going to mess up your picture, you're forced to shake it up and start all over again and hope you get it right.
Now, Ted, it's interesting. It's so interesting you're using the Etch-a-Sketch, analogy. And Wednesday nights are normally not nights where we bring in politics because it is,
I missed a little bit of that.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, it's just that's one thing about this is when you do it on your phone, somebody comes and asks. So I find it interesting that you used Etch-a-Sketch, and I won't bring a lot of politics in, but that's one of the things. Yeah, because, I mean, it is a politically themed show, but the Wednesday nights are not supposed to be that way. But, you know, you mentioned Etch-a-Sketch. It just reminds a lot of the listeners of the Romney campaign, and we really rail against the Romney campaign because they're talking about how it's the Etch-a-Sketch campaign where, you know, during the primaries he can, you know, run as a conservative, but once, you know, it gets into the general election that one of his advisors said, well, you could just take his campaign and make it as an Etch-a-Sketch and then he can start running as a, you know, moderate. So that really ticks off a lot of us conservatives. So I find it interesting.
Well,
that,
I'm sorry if I offended anybody. This Etch-a-Sketch analogy is not political. It is strict. Well, I guess you could call it still fictional, either way you look at it. But this is a fantasy adventure realm, okay? Please don't have snipers camped out my back door trying to take a pop shot at me.
Like No, it's just funny, and I believe in the law and the law of attraction, and I believe that, you know, we're talking about so much, and there's the phraseology again. There's the phrase of Etch-a-Sketch. It's just you know, little irony there that it brought up. But go ahead, I digress.
No, that's okay. That's quite all right. So, you know, as I mentioned, our world, you know, will start all over from the beginning and start all over again. And the cyclings of the world has happened four previous times, and we make mention of that in our books, in our book series, how many cycles have happened and which cycle this story takes place on. And during the cyclings of the world, we have several major powers that have figured out that the universe actually has been repeating itself. And through all this, they've been leaving themselves clues here and there where they can gain more power, and they have been achieving this. And just as they have been gaining in power, our heroes have been gaining in power as well. So They, you know, our main protagonist, our female protagonist, which is, you know, very enjoyable for a lot, for the majority, actually, you know, majority of our readers are female indeed. And they all love the fact that we have a female protagonist. And, you know, she has been beaten down and beaten up throughout her life, that she doesn't think, see herself as anything, or a hero for that matter. And through the help of her friends, you know, encouraging her on and pushing her where, you know, beyond her expectations. And she's figured out that she is one of the keys to possibly breaking this curse. And through more arcane research, by happenstance, she finds out that her friends are another possible key to breaking this curse. So it's really empowering for her and very encouraging. You know, at first it's, you know, kind of scary. You know, I'd be a little afraid too. Well, crap, how am I going to do this? But, you know, she knows she has a strong group of people encouraging her on that won't let her fail. And it kind of empowers her to, you know, want to encourage her friends. Hey, you know, she informs everybody of this and very encouraging. Yeah, they're a little afraid and tepid at first, but, you know, they all look this evil straight in the eye and say, hit me with your best shot.
Now one thing I've
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, one thing I've noticed, as I said, you know, I've read as much of the books as I could. You know, I must be honest with you, Ted, is that, you know, a lot of the parts, you know, just because of the scheduling, you know, I skipped. And I must say a lot of the parts had to do with, you know, the girly parts. And there are girly parts in there, you know. I mean, well, as you said, I mean, the protagonist of the story is female. You know, and then they have, you know, girly relationship stuff where she's pining over a guy or something like that.
Right.
Do I got that right? Where that occurs, where she's pining over a guy. You know, and for a guy, I'm just like, yeah, let's get to the battles. You know what I mean? So,
well, it's
what
not,
it
just,
that,
it's not so much the girly parts either. We have a lot. We touch on a lot of things from the female point of view. I mean, this girl has been beaten and abused. Every which way you can think of, by her father. You know, he's been beating her up. He abused her, you know, physically and ostracized her and emotionally abused her. And then other people have taken this step further. And, you know, here's part of that mature audience section. She's been raped in her
mm-hmm.
life. So, you know, and she lives through this. She has nightmares about this. So not all the times she not every time she's going to be pining over a guy. She's dealing with
well,
her
yeah,
demons.
I'm just talking about the parts I'm sorry.
Okay.
All I'm saying is, I'm not saying that's all it is. I'm just saying I was trying to defend myself for not reading all of it.
Well, shame on you. You're not going to read
it.
I know.
But in my defense, I was just trying to defend myself. In my defense, you know, I was just saying, I was just flipping through, you know, when I seen the parts about her pining over a guy, I just kind of, you know, okay,
yeah,
let's get to a battle instead of going over that, because that has happened. And as I said, you know, the description, you know, they've got romance there. When, hey, I'm all for, you know, for romance, I guess, but hearing it from a female perspective, I guess, just isn't, you know, as interesting to me as someone getting a sword put through the throat or something like that. But
right. Well,
someone using
a
psychic power or something.
Well, some of that pining has been on my end too, you know. I've had to explore this area, you know, as a male writer, to try to write in the female perspective. And that is a challenge. That is a serious challenge for a guy, to write in the mind of the opposite sex. And, you know, Tracy, I've had a lot of help from my writing partner, Tracy Chaudhary. She's held my hand through this, and, you know, I've come a long way.
Well, I know there's a lot of relationship building. I mean, as I said, I mean, and I'm not trying to be, you know, a comparison. You know, you don't like to compare
mm-hmm.
books, but I've read a lot in this type of genre, and when
yeah.
I read the series, and truly when I read the series, and I've, as I said, I've read a lot, hundreds, literally, fantasy fiction novels, because I actually,
wow.
I'm a book. I collect books, and,
yeah.
And probably a large portion of my collection is fantasy fiction books that I've read. I mean, frankly, most
okay.
of the books I do have is politics. However, you know, but and I've got philosophy and theology. You know, I really enjoy those. But I do. But I have read a lot of fantasy fiction, and the one that actually comes into mind the most of a series. And I believe the audience will be familiar with the series. Is it really? The books really reminded me. You mentioned Tolkien, and I could see the influence that Tolkien
mm-hmm.
has had on these books, just in the way that, for one, the series is epic in nature. You know,
yes.
it is epic in nature. It's a you know, not just a small story. It's a, you know, it's a expansive story, but it also you see as in because especially what brought this out. For Tolkien's books is when the movies came out. You know, when the Lord of the
right.
Rings movies came out. I mean, you read the things in the book, but when you could see something as a visual, brings it out more. But one thing that I found in the book that I also found in, you know, in the Lord of the Rings series is the relationship building. That's what I was building up to. Is you could see how the different characters in the, you know, in the Tolkien series, you know, the way they built the relationships up with the other characters. And I've
yeah.
seen a lot of that happening in these books, in the World of Shandahar series. So what I'd like to do is use that as a segue. If you could describe to me maybe an example of the main character, the you know, that she built with another character, maybe a friend or a colleague or something of that nature.
Well, her relationships, you know, the first person that really reaches out to her is in a relationship stance or even something
first
beyond the friendship is Denim. You know, he really goes to bat for her. He defends her
and
early on in the book.
And who's Denim for the audience's
Denim?
Sake?
I'm sorry. Please forgive me, listeners of the show. Denim is an elf, or what we call in our world a Faelan. And he is a member of the elven class who lives underground. For those of you who read Dragonlance, you're familiar with the Drow. Well, he is a Sumerian. No, not Sumerian of ancient history in our time, but you know we call them Sumerians. And they are hated and ostracized by a lot of other different races and ethnicities, just as the Drow are of Dragonlance. And you know, he's really the first one to reach out and form any kind of a friendship with her. You know, he, you know, when a lot of the other members look at her the wrong way, he's the first one to step in front and say, "Well, you got to get through me first." And then immediately, you know, that friendship is sparked. And then Denim reaches out and tries to go a step further and turn it into a romantic type thing. But, you know, he has a hard time dealing with
the
fact that that's not
that's
his destiny.
That's where I flip through the pages.
Yes.
That's where I start flipping
sorry.
Through, like I said. I'm sorry,
mm-hmm.
go ahead.
That's all right, quite all right. And so, you know, we have a lot of unique individuals that pine for her friendship. And she has to learn how to form, you know, further form these friendships and bonds and camaraderie, something that you know, she has been barely learning through her. Adriana, again, is our female protagonist. She is what we call a talent, which is a magic or spellcasting type individual. So she's been in a city dedicated to magical study. We call it Andahai. And when we encounter her, she is coming home for the first time in over, you know, 10 years, over, I guess that's a decade. Yeah, over a decade, she hasn't been home. And, you know, she's seen the city for the first time since she left and how much it's grown and expanded. And her homeland is a place that we call Shangri-Lak. But, you know, Shandahar is a vast world filled with all kinds of interesting and intriguing people, places, creatures all around.
Now what motivated essence of the other author. It's a different it was a different genre. The other author was, but everyone's got a motivation for why they wanted to write a book, you know, or write a series of books. And so if you could tell the audience what the the motivation between yours and if you can chime in for your partner, who unfortunately wasn't able to make it tonight, and that's understandable. You know, what was the motivating for you guys to, you know, to start writing the book?
One of the main motivators behind this and was this was a story that I was working on through a different role-playing game, actually. My partner Tracy loved the idea I was coming with, that I was presenting before everybody, and she approached me and said, I want to turn your story into a book, and I said, I want to help you. So that was our main inspiration there, aside from all the other fantasy books and cartoons and movies that we have been exposed to over the years. But it was my intriguing story that sparked all of this. And we decided to create our own rules for how everything would work in Shandahar. Then we started to populate it with, you know, creatures, places, and people. Not necessarily you would know, but we started to populate it, and then we had to further shape the rules in order to fit everything and tie it all together.
Well, that sounds like that took quite some time. If you can inform the audience, what was the time frame that it took you to write? And you have a series of novels.
Yes,
and
we do.
So how long did it take to – tell, why don't we start this way? Tell the name of the first novel and how long it took to write these. What was the time span it took to write the novels? So now, I know it sounds like with all this creation, it takes a while to put something like this together.
It does indeed take a while. Our original – and, yes, this is original – our original first book, which was originally titled Shadow Over Shandahar, Child of Prophecy, was originally published in 2005. And we had been shaping and recreating our world for about 7 or 8 years prior to the 2005 original printing.
Sounds a lot like Avatar. It took a long time to do the Avatar movie. It took like 5 years just to make that one movie. But go ahead. I digress. So the creative process, you know, to make something, you know, unique and, you know, pretty much from scratch, it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of, you know, thinking. But go ahead.
Yeah, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into this. And since we've been picked up by a publishing company, I believe that was in 2011, I do believe, we were picked up by Loco Neal Publishing. A relatively new publishing company. They picked us up. We met James O'Barnes, who is our publisher. We met him at a convention in 2011 called Millennicon, which is a small fantasy sci-fi convention that happens here in Cincinnati, up along I-275, up around the Sharonville area. Since we've been picked up, you know, we were asked to cut our books down because, you know, our original printing
I'm sorry, Ted. Real quick, just to let you know, is you know, I appreciate you giving the information to where that would be, but this is a national show, and there's people who listen in who are from Florida and New York and Texas and. So they're not going to know where 275 is. I appreciate the information, but I just wanted to let you know that there's people from other states that are listening in tonight. So, but that's okay. It's not a put down thing. I'm just trying to, you know, let you know that it's a national show. But go ahead.
So we were asked to cut our books down because our original printings of our books were over 511 pages thick. So. You know, which gave us the opportunity to further go through our books for the reprinting and cut out a lot of redundancies, make even more corrections to our spelling, punctuation, and grammar. And with the editor that Loco Neal Publishing presented with us have made our job that much easier and more enjoyable. And the new addition to our Shadow Over Shandahar series is our book one is subtitled Dark Storm Rising. And that is what people will see when they go to my website, again, www.worldofshandahar.com. And again, you can read the first chapter of all of my books on my website. And I have a group page, a link to my Facebook group page for World of Shandahar as well.
Oh, I wish I had a link to that. Then I can try to put that in the chat as well. I could find it and put it on, you know, on my page as well. So one of the titles, you said you have the different titles for the book, and I have the older series, but I do not have the newer series yet. So if you could just tell the audience, because one thing I'll let you know is for the people who were not able to make it in to hear the show tonight, you know, live, there is also on Blog Talk Radio an archive aspect of it in which this show is recorded. There's an archive where people will be able to access the show, anytime during the day or night, where they can listen to it recorded, right? And so it's more convenient for listeners who can't get in, on an 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time show or what have you, whatever it is in their state. And also, what I do is on the weekend when I don't do a live show, I do a rebroadcast where I will rebroadcast from 8 to 10, usually on a Friday or Saturday night, this show. So, it's a Wednesday night show, which has the authors in there, so it gives another opportunity for people to listen and a further opportunity for exposure for the authors who come onto the show. So go ahead. I just wanted to put that up. And also I'm going to be working in the future on a website where I'm going to be featuring the listener. I mean, the people who are going to be on the show. It's a work in process. I'm trying to find the right, the right website that can accommodate what I'm looking to do. That's a project I'm hoping to do in the future. And that also would give more opportunities for promotion, at least for a week, for the people who are going to come onto the show. But anyway, I'm done plugging that aspect. So go ahead, Ted.
Well, we currently have four books out. Our first series of The Shadow of Shandahar is three books thick. The first one, as I mentioned, is Dark Storm Rising. Our second one is subtitled Echoes of Time. And our third one is subtitled Whispers of Prophecy. And our fourth book, which is part one to our next adventure with new characters based in the same world, is Darkness of Ancillar, subtitled Blood of Dragons.
Now, I believe I've read part of that book, not the newer one, but the older one. So would you mind giving a little teaser about a fact in that book?
Which one?
Well, the last one, the one that's with the new characters, just kind of a little tea. I talked to all the authors before the show, kind of set some things up. So we've talked about this, about the little just give a little teaser about that, about the characters and how that links to the previous books.
Well, Dark Storm, Blood of Dragons, as I mentioned, is part one to our next adventure. Some of the main characters in that story are children of some of the main characters in the first story, Shadow Over Shandahar. And some of the main characters of the Shadow Over Shandahar series make a appearance in that story as well.
Yes, just a little teaser, at least for myself, I like continuity. Things flow from one to the next. And I mean, I even like to see that in video games. Yes, folks, I'm a geek. I readily admit that.
Yep.
That's okay,
I'm a geek as well, and I'm proud to admit it.
Big
even
Star
on
Trek
a
fan.
Syndicated
yep.
show such as this.
Yeah, so, I digress. So, but also, I actually wanted to bring up, because I brought it up in the description for the show, is you have some short stories as well in two anthologies, correct?
Actually, three anthologies.
Oh, well, see, I'm behind in the times. I missed the third one. So if you would like to tell us about that, that'd be great.
Sure. We have a short story in a Dragon Roots publication called Missing Pieces, Volume 1. And that short story is titled, oh, shoot, give me a moment here. I got to find it. A Simple Twist of Fate. And then in the second publication of the Missing Pieces, we have another short story, which is Breath of Life. And there is an anthology of short stories from a convention called Origins. We have a short story in their anthology collection called Time Travel Tales. And our short story in that book is entitled Impression.
Now, can you also get those on the website?
No, you can. I don't believe you can. I think the only books you can get on our website are ours, and you may or may not be able. I'm sorry, my computer is giving me a lot of hiccups as of late, so I can't really go there to find out.
No, that's
right
no,
now
that's
offhand, but I do believe you can get the Missing Pieces Volume 1 and 2 from our website as well.
Okay, great. Yeah, well, actually, I could pull that up. Let me, because I do have the website up here on my computer, and let's see.
My computer is slowly turning into a paperweight.
Yeah, I've got kind of a dinosaur here, but. Yes, you can get Dark Storm Rising, Echoes of Time, Whispers of Prophecy. Ooh, I really like the picture of that one. And then you have Breaking Death. Oh, no, that's coming soon. And then, yes, I see. Yeah, I'm like, oops.
Yep.
And then there's Missing Pieces Volume 2 and Missing Pieces Volume 1. And then there's Dark Mist of Ancillar, Blood of Dragons. So that
yes.
is... Oh, now I see Warrior of Destiny. Are you still selling the...
We still have a few books left of the Warrior of Destiny.
Okay. Now, would you also find that on Amazon or no? Is that just on your website?
You can find. I do believe you can find all of our books on Amazon, yes. Even though the original editions, Child of Prophecy and Warrior of Destiny, we told Amazon to no longer print them, I still believe you could buy used books and Warrior of Destiny, whatever they have left, but of those books. But no, those books are no longer in print. All the remaining Warrior of Destiny books are in our possession, and we're selling those.
Well, so that means I can sell the autographed ones I've got for a premium then, right? Because of the old edition. No, I'm just joking, Ted.
You can do what you want.
No, I picked those up. I picked those up at the convention. That was great. So how much are so if someone gets you to the website? I mean, they'll see the price on the website.
Sure.
But for the people who just would like to know, is that how much are you pricing those for?
Our books are priced $14.95 a copy.
And
ordering from our website, it's coming from our personal stock that we have. So all of our books will be shipped to you, signed by both myself, Ted Krim, and Tracy Chaudhary.
That's great. Yeah, so they're both autographed. They'll both be coming as autographed copies.
Yes, they will.
That's awesome. And approximately, because I said I've only had the older books, so how many pages? Because you're right, the older books were massive. I mean, they're like 400
yes,
pages.
Yes, they were.
I mean,
originally,
book was
that was supposed to be
pages.
One book.
Yeah. It was, that would have been 1,200 pages, Ted. The first book was like 400, because these books have been out for a while, it's like 400 and something pages, the first one. So and you said they've been condensed. So about how many pages are they now?
Approximately 291 pages now.
Okay.
And all of our books come with a follow-along map in the beginning, and we also include at the back of our books a glossary and pronunciation guide of all the words that we use.
Oh, great. Yeah, because, you know, one of the things I've noticed is, because I read a lot of historical fiction as well, and I really love historical fiction, and you know, what I really like to get, you know, that just made me think, and there actually is an author that I would love to be able to get on the show at some point as well, because I've read a lot of her books, but this is your show right now, Ted, so I'm not even going to mention her
Thank
name.
You.
So I'm not even going to mention that author's name. This is for you. So, no, and if it was my book, no, I'm just joking. But, so yeah, because, you know, when people want to, one thing I like about books is it's not, you know, I know people are going to ask this, and I loathe to ask this myself, because I am, since I do collect books, you know, I think the Kindle was just one of the most evil devices that has ever, you know, crossed this planet. Now, well, I mean, I guess it does save paper, but, you know, there's the one redeeming quality. But
yes.
If you keep a book, you know, you're keeping it. So I won't get into my metaphysical thoughts about trees and
books. Our books are available on Kindle or ebook.
Okay. No, I'm just kidding. I just don't like this, because, I mean, I just like that commercial where people are like, oh, you just get the feel of the book, you know. I mean, it's substance. You know, I'm a substantive man. I am a man of substance. You know, and having a book in your hand, or having this little thin electronic device in my hand, you know, I'd rather have that that substance. I want that book of substance. You know,
you can't beat the smell of a new, freshly opened book.
Exactly, and you know what? It's very hard to get an autographed Kindle.
It is, yes, it is very hard.
If you have an author autograph your Kindle, your Kindle's ruined. Or if you wipe it off, then it's not going to be worth as much because you don't have the autograph on it. But Kindle. You cannot be autographed.
Right.
How do you think about that?
You can't really write on a Kindle. You're going to ruin it.
There you go. Kindle. We've got you there. You can't be autographed. What do you think? Okay, I digress. I'm just going off on a tangent. You know,
I digressed a lot during this phone interview, sir.
I have a tendency to do that. I go off on tangents because my brain multitasks just as much as I do. So that's what happens. But anyway, I'll get back to the topic. So you said they're like approximately 300 pages, which you know is still a good standard size book. You know, you know, so I just wanted to check on that. So, but anyway, is there anything else that you'd like to, you know, you'd like to chime in on, you know, about these theories? Or, you know, there is something we talked about earlier. I did mention it in the description of a current project you are working on. Is there anything you'd like to speak on of that tonight or not?
My current project, I'm currently taking the rules that we created for our world as far as writing. And I'm currently in the long, arduous task of turning those rules into a role-playing game, as you mentioned.
Right. Now, when you mean role-playing game, that's kind of in the genre of like a Dungeons & Dragons.
Like Vampire the Masquerade, Dungeons & Dragons,
Okay, that type, because you know some, you know, you have like board games or whatever that consider self role playing. It's real, in my opinion, it's like you know, it's not really, you know, not really that.
Mm-hmm.
So now that project, you know, it takes a long time. How long have you been working on that project? So now that's creation.
This has been in the thinking developmental stage for about 5 years. And for the past year, I've actually started putting finger to keyboard. I can't necessarily put pen to paper anymore, not with the electronic age.
Right.
Saves more time doing it finger to keyboard.
Okay, well, is there anything else you'd like to, you know, to add in for the audience about either your book or your series or maybe, you know, about the writing partner? Or is there any hope, you know, for the audience, you know, any teaser that perhaps she'd be able to come on one show one time?
We are talking about it. Yes,
yeah,
we are talking about it. Right. Yeah, I have spoken to her about it, and there's a possibility of her coming in once. Yes, I would. She would love to. Right now, with her the four kids and the houses that her and her husband own and renovate and rent out. Yeah, that's a eats up
sure,
a lot of
no,
time.
Sure, it could be a tall order, and I understand, but I'm sure the audience, and I can't speak for them, and I can't speak for the females in the audience, but I've got a feeling, okay, I don't even like the word feeling, I have a thought that well, you know, well, my audience is when I talk about that, but, you know, I've got a thought, you know, that I think the ladies in the show, who listen to the show, and even out there on the archives, I think they'd really enjoy hearing, you know, a female author there describing about, you know, her contributions to the book. And especially since, as you said, the protagonist is a female, which
yeah.
you don't really see that in a lot of your fantasy fiction novels or your movies. Now, there is a new cartoon movie coming out which my daughter would probably like it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember. Oh, actually, I do remember the name. But this isn't her show. I'm not promoting this movie, so I'm not going to mention it right now. So, well, we like to have fun here. That's what Wednesday nights are about, is, you know, that's why I have the people with either businesses or shows or,
right.
you know, if they have, you know, a playwright. I actually have a gentleman who is away on vacation right now. He's actually in Europe. He's actually doing a trip in Europe right now. But when he comes back, yeah, he's a playwright and an author, and he's talking about coming in, you know, and you know, talk about his, you know, his books and things of that nature. So, but we, you know, that's what Wednesday nights for. We cover politics, you know, Monday or Sunday through Tuesday. Well, and then Thursday. Thursday being environmentally themed, is if you were on the line while I was playing a clip to give a kind of a, you know, an introduction for tomorrow night's show, you know, kind
mm-hmm.
of a preview, I should say, not an introduction, of tomorrow night's show. So it's nice to have one night a week. You know, sometimes we'll have three authors or playwrights or what have you, or people with shows or businesses I like to promote on here. But tonight we had two, and that's fine. So I was able to give, normally I'd give the people about a half an hour, but because I only had two on, I was able to give them, you know, more time, you know, to be on the show to, you know, talk about the West. Now, someone in here asked, one of the things I like to do, Ted, is we have a chat aspect here, and they ask
you're
going to
put me on the spot, aren't you?
In the chat, I'll let you answer it, but
okay. But
they ask, is this like Dungeons & Dragons? Now I'm gonna type in here in the chat and talk about the game or the book, because you're also working.
Sure.
And then I'm gonna ask her this, and then when she gets reply, I will ask you game, because yes, Cindy, because if you've been the game, is the game like, yes, they're asking, is the game gonna be like Dungeons and Dragons?
Unlike Dungeons & Dragons, I am trying to put the role-play aspect into the game. So I am currently trying to put as much mathematics in this as possible to take out the die rolling. So, you know, with a certain point system, you know, if your points are high enough, that you will succeed automatically in an action or something of that nature, to cut out the die rolling, to make things work a lot smoothly and quicker, to get back to that role play aspect.
So it's good.
In a sense, yes, it is going to be like Dungeons and Dragons. No, I'm not going to weigh it down with a lot of rules, because as Gary Gygax said in his 1970s edition to his Dungeon Master's Guide, it is the spirit of the game, not the letter of the rules, which is important.
Well, I never subscribed to that. I'm familiar with Gary Gygax myself, Ted, but I have to say that while the role-playing aspect is important for me, when I used to play Dungeons & Dragons, I was what people would consider a rules lawyer.
Followed
the letter of the rules.
yeah.
Which caused much consternation with some of the other players. But Rob, you're a rules lawyer, blah, 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 blah. You know, I mean, because I did. I mean, I'll tell a little short story, and I'm sure, you know, if you've played Dungeons & Dragons or anyone in the audience has or knows someone who does, is, you know, when they're a child, you know, your parent comes and says, you know what, if you knew half as much as you did, and I actually didn't do bad in school, but Like, if you know as much as you, you know about that Dungeons and Dragons and the rules and the this and that of that game, you would do, you know, all this in school, you know.
Well, see, that was me on my end. My mom was always saying that to me. You know, if you spent half as much time involved in your schoolwork as you do the damn game, then you'd be doing much better in school. I said, well, I countered back with, well, if school was based around Dungeons and Dragons, you're right. I would be doing better in school.
but you know, but look at Bill Gates. I mean, he was very successful, obviously, you know, and he quit college, so you don't necessarily have to do. No, don't get me wrong. I'm going to put the disclaimer here. I'm not saying, hey, people, drop out of school. You know, I think it's the, you know, the first mode of getting there. But I'm just saying it's not
right.
The only.
No. I'm not encouraging dropping out of school either. What I will say in defense of school is this: if I knew how much math was involved with creating a role-playing game, I would have paid better attention.
Yeah, but
oh my God,
is
all I have to say about the mathematics involved in creating your old role-playing game.
So it sounds like the answer is, and let me see if I could sum this up, Ted, is that in the role-playing aspect of Dungeons and Dragons, in the genre, because it is, you know, swords and spells and,
it is swords and sorcery.
And monsters. You know, and monsters and stuff like that. So in that sense, it does have the flavor of being like Dungeons and Dragons. But as it comes to the chance aspect of rolling the dice, that's not the case.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Thank you very much. So the feel of it is Dungeons and Dragons like.
Yeah.
But it's not the, you know. Not fully when it comes to the chance world. Okay, Brad, I hope that answered the question. Well, yes, Cindy, see you very soon. Well, you know, I've got some things I've got to do. The audience says, I've got some things I have to do after the show tonight. When I make it on the Sammies, it probably will not be too late. And if you don't mind, Ted, I'm a part of a group here on Blog Talk Radio. We have a group we call ourselves the Conservative Conversation. And one of the things we do in the Conservative Conversation is we like to put a shout-out to the members of our group. It's kind of, you know, supporting the people in our network.
Uh-huh.
And I like to take this time to do that. And the show after this show is Samuel Samford's, and that is Constitutional Conservatives Unite. And you can find that either on Blog Talk Radio by looking for a show there or go to one of his links that you find on Facebook. And you can also find Samuel Samford's show on a Facebook app called Newt Now, in which you just go into the search browser, type in Newt Now as one word, and click, and you will take it to a page, or a few clicks, and they'll take it to a page where you will find a list of shows, this one included, and you also see Samuel Samford's show on there. But then you also see a couple others, such as Charlotte Diablese, and she's got two shows on there. One is from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that one is called Prophetic Art Class. And she also has another class called Pray USA, which is from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then from 10 to midnight, and also from midnight to 2, you have Mark Prasik's live video chat show that you will also find there on Newt Now on the page. And so, you know, you'll definitely find something in one of those that I believe that you'll like. So thank you very much, Ted, for letting me get that out for people to go on the Sammy Show. And then hopefully if you are late night owls like I am or night owls like I am, then after you visit Sammy's for the whole show or at least part of it, then you'll go and visit Mark's Prasik show and, you know, some are part of his as well. And see what this conservative conversation is all about. Now back to you, Ted. Thank you. Thank you for letting me take some of that time to promote my friend's show.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. This is your show. You can do pretty much whatever you want.
I am merely
a guest.
Well, I appreciate that. But one of the things that are different about these Blog Talk Radio shows, or at least mine, and Samuel's too, you know, in part of our conservative conversation, is we it is a conversation. You're not going to have someone like Rush, you know, we're not going to be like a Rush Limbaugh or, you know, a Glenn Beck, you know, who's going to, you know, take over the show and just do monologues and then just give their guests, or the people who call in, you know, a couple minutes, you know, to talk and then shut them down and then go over. This is more of a people show. You know, one of the people we support in politics, and this is a political show, is we're a big supporter of, you know, most of us are a big supporter of Newt Gingrich. And Newt Gingrich ran a people's campaign. And our shows kind of mirror that in that we are the people show. Our show is around the people who call in, such as yourself, more so than it is about the host. And we think that's a good way of making this, you know, be the new interactive media of the 21st century that will one day, I think, you know, replace your regular radio talk shows and possibly even your cable shows. But that being said, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying. Oh wow.
Oh yeah, that's one of our goals. We're in our infancy, but we're going to grow because I think that, you know, what we offer was, you know, we offer as people are hungry for it. You know, I mean, they want to be a part of something. So, and that's important because, you know, I think with the way things have been now, they haven't. See, here's the thing: in these kind of shows, Ted, is that people participate like yourself. And in the other shows, you know, even when they are politically themed, is that it's a participatory show. You know, you watch Fox News or one of those. You listen to Talking Heads, you know, or if you listen to Rush's show or Glenn Beck, you're just listening to a talking head. It's not as participatory. Even the people who are the callers or call in, it's just not as participatory as a show such as these. And since I'm touting that kind of participation, you go on and tell us more that you'd like the audience to know about your book.
Well, at this point in time, I have exhausted everything I wanted to reveal right now.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
But if you know, I would be honored to come back onto your program and discuss things further about my books.
Oh,
delve a little bit
further
into the world of Shandahar than we've touched upon tonight.
Oh, yeah, that'd be definite. I think myself and the audience who is in here now and the people who will later hear this on the archives, and then I'm also going to do a rebroadcast. And I believe I'll be doing the rebroadcast of this show on Friday evening. It won't be a live show, so, you know, people won't be calling in, but they will be able to, you know, hear it, you know, in the time frame of 10 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right. Well, I'd like to thank you, Ted, for coming in and talking about your book.
Thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And hear me talk about our programs and what we're doing. and I definitely look forward to speaking with you again.
And I look forward to coming back on again. Thank you very much again for your time.
Well, thank you. Take care, and we look forward to next time.
All right.
All right. Good night. You too.
Bye.
All right, folks. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I'm pretty sure many of you have. And thank you very much for listening. Thank you for being a part of the conservative conversation. Now, we've got about 13 minutes left. So what I can do is take a drink first because I'm parched. So excuse me. Okay, great. Thank you. So what I'd like to do now is go ahead and do another setup for tomorrow night's show. And tomorrow night's show, once again, is we have the gentleman from Gulag Bound, and that is Arlen Williams, and we are going to discuss Agenda 21, and we're going to put that together, which Agenda 21, I see Agenda 21 as a top-down approach towards environmental protection, conservation, and sustainability. But I subscribe to what is called green conservatism, which I see as a ground-up, almost a grassroots approach towards environmental protection, conservation, and sustainability. And I think once we prove the fallacies, well, while we talk about the fallacies of top-down approach, in essence being what Agenda 21 is about, which I, you know, one of the things I contend is that the top-down approach, at least what is being used by the liberals, is basically a hijacking of the environmental movement in order to propagandize their redistribution of the liberals' redistribution of wealth agenda. So to give you a little hint of green conservatism, So I'm going to find one of my clips here, that one of these sound bites I like to play on what green conservatism is. So I will play Newt on what I call Newt on green conservatism.
The first, which my newsletter on Monday will be about, is green conservatism. I want to be very clear about this concept. I taught the Second Earth Day. I was a coordinator of environmental studies. Ronald Reagan issued a positive statement on the first Earth Day. The environment is not inherently a liberal issue. Virtually every American would like to see biodiversity. Virtually every American would like to see clean air. Virtually every American would like to make sure that we do not have unnecessary climate change, recognizing that the climate changes all the time, the natural biological rhythm or natural organic geographic or geological rhythm. Having said that, what happened to the environmentalism is that the hard left took it over, so that the environmentalism became an excuse for hysteria, it became an excuse for big government, it became an excuse for regulation, and then conservatives said, well, I'm against that. That then got translated into, well, then you're against the environment. And nobody stood up and said, wait a second, we need to have a fundamental, alternative, better solution. Let me give you an example, which you are aware of because of Three Mile Island, right here. In 1979, the left made a movie which was about as intellectually honest as Gore's recent movie. It had Jane Fonda in it, which told you almost all you needed to know. And it was called The China Syndrome. And it's just fundamentally false. It's a lie. But the combination of Three Mile Island and the China Syndrome all of a sudden led to an end to developing nuclear power in the United States. Now, let me give you the numbers. When you go back home and you run into your left-wing friends who are really desperately worried about carbon, and they really worry about Kyoto, and they think that they're going to be 20 feet of ocean next Tuesday, and the penguins are going to be walking on sand, and oh my God, why don't we do something? And of course, whatever the something is means more government and bigger power. Give them the following number. It'll drive them crazy. If the United States had developed nuclear power at the same level as France for electricity production, we would this year put 2,200,000,000 tons less carbon in the atmosphere, and we would be 15% better than the Kyoto requirements. Now, of course, they'll probably tell you, we can't do that. You say, okay, tell me again how important Kyoto is. I'll tell you again, once again, how important it is we do something now. To show you how stupid the left is. And I mean that word deliberately, because you watch these people and you kind of figure out, how do they make these things up? Gore testified recently that he wants to have no new coal-burning plants until we have the perfect coal-burning plant. This is after a man who wrote in Earth and the Balance that the greatest threat to the human race in the 20th century was the internal combustion engine, which meant that he had managed to somehow skip Stalin, Hitler, and Mao Zedong. Not an easy trick for somebody who was actually going to a very successful private school, but he did. Here's the fact. A new coal-burning plant produces 25% more electricity for the same amount of carbon. So if Gore was serious about reducing carbon, he would actually be offering a tax credit to block modernize all of the current coal plants into a next generation coal plant, and he would immediately get a 25% reduction in carbon per unit per megawatt of electricity, which is, by the way, more than Dianne Feinstein hopes to get by 2040. And he would do it without any government coercion, without any litigation, without any regulation. He would do it because it would just make economic sense to do it. So I believe we can create a green conservatism based on science, based on incentives, based on tax credits. And I think we can actually do a better job than the left because their bureaucracies inherently can't deliver. Superfund spends a third of its money on regulation and litigation. That money ought to be spent on engineers and recovery. And that's a total, we can offer a better model. So I just want to urge you, don't back off on this. Be prepared to go into the Philadelphia suburbs and say to the most passionately interested environmentalists, terrific values, here's a better way to get there. And we will suddenly have a new dialogue in America.
Okay, folks. Now, I personally am not a really big fan of nuclear energy, just because what are we going to do with the nuclear waste? And what are we going to do with the used hard water that's been irradiated? So, made with radiation, is has radiation in it, is what I'm trying to say. But so I'm not a big fan of it, but there is something that gives me hope, and it's called helium-3, and that is actually using a different it's using fusion instead of fission, but that's a topic for another day. But since this is about authors, and we know Newt Gingrich is an author, Newt Gingrich did write a book called The Contract. He co-wrote a book called The Contract with the Earth, and here's a little clip of him talking about it. And I'll play it because it's, well, author night.
Fora TV, the world is thinking.
Contract with the Earth is designed to start a new conversation on two very different fronts. It's designed, and Terry and I set out after years of conversation to do this quite deliberately. We both love animals. We both spent large parts of our career focused on animals. I wanted to be a zoo director when I was a child or a vertebrate paleontologist. My two favorite institutions were the Bronx Zoo and the American Museum of Natural History. And I really loved the natural world. When I became a teacher in 1971, I taught in the Second Earth Day. And then I became the coordinator of environmental studies at West Georgia College. Both my daughters used to go with us, and we would take classes for a week down to the Okefenokee Swamp and just try to get them invested in how rich and extraordinary and complex the natural world is and how diverse it is and how fascinating it is. And so I come out of that background in general. And we worked with E.O. Wilson and others in trying to save the Endangered Species Act. I engaged in a number of other activities as the Republican whip. I helped pass the Air Pollution Act, the Clean Air Act of 1990, which created the first cap-and-trade program for sulfuric acid and to save the lakes in the Northeast. And I've been actively involved in a variety of other programs along that line. We wanted to have two conversations in one book. We wanted to say to conservatives, don't be so put off by proposals on the left that you decide to yell no. Because when you yell no, people don't just hear you yelling no about a proposal, they think you're yelling no about the environment. And the fact is that 95% of the American people believe we have an obligation to protect the legacy that God has given us. We literally just did a series of surveys at American Solutions. We did six national surveys. Out of about 180 questions, the highest support was on protecting the legacy that we've been given by our Creator. And it brings people together whether you're right or left.
Okay, folks, I'd like to thank both Sean Henneman and Ted Krim for coming into the show tonight. I'd also like to thank all the people who came into the chat. Really appreciate you coming in tonight and everyone who listened. And I'd like to thank ahead of time for everyone who will take the time to listen to the rebroadcast or has listened to the rebroadcast or will go ahead and listen to it on archive. So I'd like to end the show in the way I end the show every night, and that is to play some music by someone who I think is not just a beautiful person, beautiful woman, but also has a beautiful voice and one of my favorites. And this is from Aubrey Ashburn. Good night, everyone, and take care.